voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Dr. Brown, I feel like I need the opening to the Pink Panther, the ba-dum, 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 da-da-dum. Do you know why I feel like I need that this morning?
Why that?
Guesses? Because of this stealth Omicron variant. Stealth. It's throwing me that we have a stealth Omicron variant. It's like a brother or a cousin to the Omicron variant that we're talking about.
I thought you were going with it was always it's always something new. It's always something to talk about. Every week
too.
We have something to talk about.
I mean, you know, it does keep our conversations very interesting. That's true. Yeah.
It does,
you know,
indeed.
It does indeed. But yeah, I was kind of thinking more like the stealth part of this. I know it has a technical name to it, but it's being coined the stealth Omicron variant, and
yes.
You know, I'm getting flooded with emails about it. First of all, what is it, and what makes it different than the original Omicron?
Sure. So it's called BA2, which is a variation of Omicron. What happened is there's more mutations within it. So it's not enough of a mutation, or at least the scientists are saying it's not enough of a mutation to name it the next Greek alphabetic number. Our alphabetic letter, which is pi, which is going to be an interesting one when we get there. It does have mutations in it, and it has different characteristics. And I think that's why it's sort of seen as being part of it. Interesting enough, it may have already been sort of floating around with Omicron. And yeah, now it's stealth. Now we're starting to identify it.
A stealth. So, I mean, how can you even, obviously you have to get one of those lab tests done if, in fact, it's stealth that you have versus the Omicron variant.
Correct.
But, I mean, is there, like, something that would stand out in those lab tests that would say, nope, you've got the stealth? I can't even believe I'm calling it that, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. No, there is not. So what happens is that we will have, so first of all, because of the different testing, it can be very tricky. So if people are still doing at-home rapid molecular tests, then it would not show it.
Really?
If you're doing an antigen test, it would definitely not show it. So both the home tests, any of the home tests are not going to be able to detect if you have any variants that are there. The PCR tests that are done in the laboratories, usually most hospitals like Griffin have, the PCR that is done, the PCR will have special flags on them because it's a more dynamic test. So it actually does look for irregularities. I want to say it doesn't necessarily see the variants, but it will look for irregularities. If it sees irregularities, then those, it's flagged to go to the state or to a larger laboratory, and those laboratories can do full sequencing.
Well, I this is just wow. Okay. I mean, you know, this is why I don't like the at-home tests. I'm sorry. I've been very open about it on my show, but this is why I can't stand the at-home test kits. I understand that they're a tool in the toolkit. It's to help with peace of mind. Like, I get it. I just think sometimes we're spending entirely way too much money on the at-home test kits, and they're not even, you know, with something like stealth or even the Omicron variant, they may not even detect it. But that's my own gripe. That's my own problem. It's okay,
yeah.
Dr. Brown.
My concern about the home test is it actually has, I've seen a lot of false negatives.
Right.
Which has been consistently my issue, is that people have symptoms, they test with a home antigen test. Again, there's a lot of confusion about the different types of tests.
Why don't you, can you talk about that, the antigen
sure.
test versus, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. So there's two tests that have actually come out. I'll actually have to use the company name just because it's a little easier to explain. So initially, there was a test that came out, a molecular test. It was actually called ID Now by Abbott. And what that test did is it actually looked at genetic code and protein related to the COVID-19 virus. So it actually would be able to tell you, is it positive or is it negative? A lot of false negatives and false positives that we saw within that test. Those also translated into tests that can do kind of find certain aspects of the virus. And if it looked at the genetic code, it would mean that they were potentially there or they have it. It gets tricky because genetic code doesn't necessarily mean that the virus is living. It just means that it was there. It is or was there. The antigen test is actually a little bit different. The antigen test does determine if you have the virus, because it's actually there's several different proteins that are usually associated with that. That's actually the BinaxNOW now. That's also Abbott. The BinaxNOW now, that what that looks at is actually looks at the antigen. An antigen is actually the protein, let's just say the shell of the virus that's actually being detected. When that shell of the virus gets cleared by your body, you're no longer infectious. That's how theoretically it works. But we know there's problems with that because there's a lot of false negatives and some false positives. The good thing about the antigen test is that after a period of time, it will become negative.
Okay.
The molecular test will not.
Will not. Right, because that's why you said don't get tested after you just had COVID, because it's going to keep coming up that you're positive.
That's correct.
Right.
Or you have to pick the right one, and it's been very confusing. Unfortunately, the CDC says, well, you can get tested, but if you're getting tested with PCR, PCR is the better test to detect.
Mm-hmm.
It will detect it. It usually, you know, we've gotten better and better with this, so we're seeing less false negatives. We're able to identify if there's irregularities. We're able to sequence it. So the PCR is actually very helpful. The problem with the PCR is it's going to be positive, and it can be positive up to 90 days after the initial infection.
Okay. Wow.
So there's three different types, and it gets really confusing. And I try to explain it as much as I can, so people will be aware that, you know, if you've had COVID-19, and it's been 10 days since they're there, and then you have to travel, your PCR is going to be positive. And if an airline's requiring a PCR, it's going to be positive.
You're in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really tricky.
Interesting. And I mean, but at the end of the day, Dr. Brown, unless you had COVID and you have to show, like you said, a negative, you know, result, you would prefer, though, that people take the time for the PCR.
I would.
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because the big fear here is that with these at-home tests, look, we saw it happen in our own family. It wasn't my family directly, but an in-law, their family came in from another country and they did the at-home tests, and they all showed false negatives. And when they flew back, they were positive. So
right.
Unfortunately, you know, I who knows? Did that go to the airport? Did that go to
the
cab
right.
that they were in? You know, it's that's the only thing I fear with these at-home tests, is that we're becoming so reliant on them, but who knows how much we're spreading because of them. So,
which goes back to if you're feeling sick, stay home.
Yeah, just go with your body. Don't even worry about the test. Just stay home.
Exactly.
We're talking about these at-home COVID tests, Dr. Brown. And while there are a lot of false negatives out there, there are certainly plenty of positives out there as well. And, you know, I had a really great question from a listener. How accurate do you think at this point is the data coming from our state government? And I know why she's asking that question. People aren't going to go, oh, I tested positive. Let me call Governor Lamont. Let him know that I tested positive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't even know why we're really even giving out the positivity rate anymore when we literally have no idea. I feel like we that's just not – it can't be an accurate metric at this point. I don't know if I'm wrong in saying that.
No, I think myself and colleagues have a similar question. Again, I'm not they're directly how they're getting the molecular test. I'm not sure. So yes, that is a valid concern. You know, where are they coming from? If there are so many home tests, just logic says, well, you know what, if you're positive, you're not going to start reporting to the state. You know, the local health districts are not going to know if you're positive. It really does depend on the PCR or if you seek any additional medical attention. We have seen people who have actually gone, you know, and tested and then get another test at a PCR. There are still, you know, if you go into a hospital before any procedure or even coming into the hospital, we're still testing everyone. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of tests that are being done, but the amount of tests that are being done at home are probably not being calculated.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I can't speak. It's just that's sort of my opinion. However, what I think is really important is the hospitalizations.
Yes, that's what we've been kind of focusing on. I have to be honest. I don't think I have reported a percentage, positive percentage in quite some weeks, especially since we started rolling out these tests, because of exactly what this listener is saying. I know, like, for a fact, I have multiple friends, unfortunately, and even family members who have tested positive in the last month and a half, all from these at-home tests. And I know they're not calling the government to say, hey, by the way, add me to the list.
That's why
I stopped reporting it, just because it's not that I'm saying they're not doing things right. I think they're doing it to the best of their ability. But I think the biggest metric, you're right, is the hospitalizations, which those continue to go down significantly, interestingly enough.
Yes. And that's what we're seeing in the hospitals also. So we've definitely seen a significant decrease. Yesterday, it was another 100, a decrease by 100 that were admitted. We have not changed sort of it's everyone who comes in who is positive. So I can tell you that those positivities are a combination of both positive from directly related to COVID, no other real issues, or those who've actually had COVID and incidentally have another chronic illness that's there. So those are still occurring. But from my standpoint, either way, it means that in the general population, we are seeing a reduction in those people who are getting very sick and need to be hospitalized.
We're talking to Dr. Brown this morning, taking your COVID questions. Here's one. By taking the shots and the boosters, Dr. Brown, are we preventing our own immune systems from the ability to fight any other virus? I mean, obviously COVID, but does it prevent us from fighting the virus? Or really, I'm going to go further and say, you know, does it make it sort of where we're reliant now on these vaccines?
That's a really great question. And the answer is no, because if you think about the mechanism of action and how a vaccine works, so all a vaccine does is it actually introduces a certain protein a certain protein into the body, whatever way they want to do it. In this case, it starts as an mRNA, but ultimately it's not the mRNA that we develop antibodies. It's to that spike protein. So all we're doing is activating our own immune system. So a vaccine utilizes our own immune system and does what it normally does. So you're not taking it away from anything else. All you're doing is saying, hey, you know what? We want you to look for this protein. And when this protein shows up another time, we want you to have the full force of the immune system attack it. So it would not distract from anything else that was there. It would just, all it's doing is using the normal mechanism to activate it. And then it actually helps with your immune system, because the more times that you actually receive a vaccine, let's say the flu vaccine, those are more variants that your body has actually seen. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, you have memory. Every time you get a vaccine, you have memory that's there. That memory then will be recalled if you get reinfected. And that's why the flu vaccine becomes really important, because the longer you get the flu vaccine, if you get it every year, you actually become immune. You are able to fight off all different strains of the flu later on.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, Dr. Brown, you know, with the vaccines, it's actually making your immune system stronger to fight more.
It really is.
Okay.
You know, that's what vaccines do. Again, all it's doing is targeting the normal mechanisms that you would have if you got infected. In fact, it's actually even better than that, because when you get infected, you have all these different proteins that you're potentially developing antibodies to, and your body doesn't know necessarily which one's the most important. Mm-hmm. This is what's really important about COVID-19. When we give you a vaccine, give you the COVID vaccine, that vaccine says you need to look for this specific spike protein. This is the important one. And we're finding that that's really important for reinfections. Because we found that there's a study that just came out of England that demonstrated for those who were actually getting infected with Omicron, it was 2/3 of them had actually previously been infected by COVID-19 and did not get the vaccine.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Dr. Brown, I unfortunately have more questions here for you, but we have run out of time. But don't worry, for anyone I missed, Dr. Brown will be back here next Thursday, same time, same place. And we so appreciate having you on the show each and every week. Thanks, Dr. Brown.
My pleasure, Melissa.
All right. We'll talk again next week.